Hello there, pretty babies. It's me, Will Meneker, and it's your Chapo. In just a little bit, we are bringing you our official Chapo 2018 election preview, courtesy of our very own Wonkspert, Virgil Texas. We're going to break down all the hot races, all the predictions, all the personalities, all the gold.
We're going to wonk off together.
Yeah, we're going to be wonking real hard this episode. But before that, and I know it's because you guys are begging for it. You were demanding it. I've heard you.
The people, they can't get enough.
I have heard you, and we are your voice. We will be talking to the Daily Beast's Will Sommer about our favorite press conference of all time, Jacob Wall and Jack Berkman, live from the Holiday Inn.
Directed by the Coen brothers.
Yeah, no, burn after tweeting is this story. this story has every conceivable level of internet grifter and pathological personality. It has a dachshund named Jack Jr. and a shooting.
Yeah, I didn't even know that part coming.
It has a make-believe pretend intelligence agency called Surefire Intelligence.
Staffed by the cast of Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah. We were just laughing about, like, okay, so Jacob Wall's made up intelligence, private intelligence firm called Surefire Intelligence. Like, that's like calling your company a very good company, not a scam.
Not Scam Inc.
Yeah, the totally legal, not at all criminal enterprise.
What I really like about this is that his whole thing, and we'll talk about exactly what it was in a moment, his entire plan was basically the upper middle class internet grifter version of the MAGA bombing of a real big Trump fan who saw his president being attacked and decided, I'm going to help. And instead of mailing bombs to Robert De Niro, he decided to try to create a fake sex scandal for Robert Mueller. Amazing.
He had the documents, all the real shit.
He's got
all
the real
raw
shit.
He's got the
raw shit.
I'm just imagining Jacob Wall just like in a closet smiling.
I'm imagining that too. Yeah. Or sitting on
just
that
dumb grin, and then yeah.
Or sitting on that that hobby horse thing in the basement.
Oh yeah,
George
yeah.
Clooney's house.
Just in a second, you'll be hearing about will be our wall-to-wall Jacob Wall coverage. Then we'll be breaking down the midterm elections. But most importantly, you know, Tuesday coming up, the most important election of your lifetime, of any lifetime.
The most recent important most important election of your lifetime.
Will there be a blue wave or a red tide? Who can tell? No matter what happens on Tuesday night, though, the real story and the real thing that you do not want to miss is the debut of me, Matt, and Virgil's Chapo Election Night Live Twitch stream.
That's right.
We are covering the whole thing, baby, from 8 till question mark.
Absolutely.
I don't know.
And there's going to be guests, both in studio and on the phone.
This is a highly ambitious project. You know, Felix has staked out his claim in the Twitchverse.
Yes.
The time has come for us to put our marker down.
Yeah. We're anting up and kicking in. We're gonna do the most important game of all, democracy.
Stay tuned. Just be on the lookout for the Twitch link that we'll have up on for Tuesday. It will not be on the Chapo FYM Twitch stream.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we don't want to step in anyone's toes, or if we get taken down because of the various libels and copyright infringements we do, I don't want Felix not to have games available to him.
No, of course not.
So, Tuesday night, Matt, Virgil, and myself will be live on Twitch bringing you the real raw
the
shit.
The raw shit. The real intelligence.
Shit.
The results, and then the takes you need
analysis.
To go with you to talk to your friends about and pretend to have ideas that you got from us.
The last time we did an election show, it went great.
It went fantastic. It was a huge success. We got exactly what everyone wanted, and it was wonderful.
Okay, without further ado, Will Sommer. All right, you people have been dying for this one. You've been requesting, demanding, nay, Wall to wall Jacob Wall coverage. And joining us now is the man who is better equipped to do that than anyone else that we know. The only other Will that I recognize that I will not demand that they change their name if they appear on the show, Will Sommer of the Daily Beast. How's it going, Will?
Hey, good to be back.
Okay, so you wrote an article this week about this utterly hilarious press conference that took place in Washington, D.C., involving, Internet, Trump, Jugendrind, Jacob Wall, this weirdo Jack Berkman, and their allegations to publicize their allegations that Robert Mueller raped a woman. But before we get into the specifics of that press conference and the hilarious charades that went down during it, let's talk a bit about the characters of Jacob Wall and Jack Berkman. Let's start with Jack Berkman because he's like sort of the other figure that I wasn't really familiar with. Who is Jack Berkman?
Yeah, so Jack Berkman doesn't really have Jacob's national profile. He's sort of a notorious DC lobbyist in this area, and he's kind of a well-known, I don't know if laughingstock is too hard of a word, but his thing is he'll just do anything for publicity. And so he had this event where he was trying to get gay people banned from the NFL. And then after... So yeah, he's a real nice guy. And then after Seth Rich was murdered, he sort of attached himself to that case and was initially sort of like cozying up to the family. But then when people were losing interest in the case, he started really going wild. And he would have this press conference where he's like, okay, I'm going to reveal this deep state whistleblower who said that the ATF murdered Seth Rich. And then I said, is this guy really going to come in? And he's like, oh, he's going to come in wearing a mask, like a Lucha Libre mask or something. And then, you know, the guy ends up not showing. It's a classic Jack move. He makes these big promises, never delivers. But the other notable thing about him is he actually has been involved in some intrigue. One of his sort of minions in the fake Seth Rich investigation ended up getting mad that he was getting all the credit and attempted to murder him. And so there's this scene where Jack is he hears a noise in his yard or something, and he walks out with his dachshund, Jack Jr., and gets shot twice. Oh, and so fortunately Jack has since recovered from that, but he's a real like kind of colorful local character. And the other thing is this is far from the first press conference he's had at this Holiday Inn in suburban Virginia. He is very into this Holiday Inn. He says it's the last hotel that will have him.
Well, their continental breakfast is unbeatable, you know.
Exactly.
They have those waffle makers where you pour the batter in. Good stuff.
Mwah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's Jack Berkman, who apparently has a dachshund named Jack Jr. and was shot by a former source of his, I suppose. But this is really the man of the hour. This is what everyone's going crazy for on Twitter. Jacob Wall. Who is Jacob Wall outside of his sort of, I mean, we know him mainly as a sort of annoying Twitter guy who's mainly well known for embarrassing himself. And
he's a sniveling Trump replier.
Yeah.
He's always there. Mr. President, I support you. Deport Colin Kaepernick. All that shit.
Yeah, but this guy comes from sort of a family of, like, he was sort of grown in a test tube to be like the perfect snot-nosed Republican teenager, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, Jacob is a sort of kind of a, as you mentioned, his dad is a big Republican. His dad's on Fox News a decent amount. And Jacob has this kind of very like pugnacious, but at the same time, as you mentioned, sort of a bootlicky attitude on Twitter. He's always getting in fights with people and stuff like that. But Jacob's sort of original claim to fame was that he was the world's youngest hedge fund operator, supposedly. And when he was 17, he ran, I don't know if this was a real hedge fund, but he had some sort of investment operation. And as it turns out, there's a reason they don't let 17-year-olds run hedge funds normally, because Jacob ran afoul of the regulators and essentially refused to cooperate with the investigation, and he has been banned from life from trading futures.
Who could have seen that coming? Anyone who gave money to this fucking child should have it all confiscated.
I'm making a big short on curfews.
homework, that's a bear market, I'll tell you right now.
So, and then, like, you know, the running joke with Jacob Wall is his sort of patented catchphrase on Twitter is I'm at a hipster coffee shop in L.A. and blank, you know, like that's his go to move when he wants to say, like, all the hipsters in L.A. are all secretly like Trump, or they're all talking about how they're going to vote 10 times in the upcoming election for Democrats that are being paid by George Soros to do so.
Yeah, he's always making these weird tweets. Most of them, as you mentioned, are from hipster coffee shops, and it's like the hipster, I'm at the hipster coffee shop, and they're all so glad Trump is sending troops to the border. But like he mixes it up sometimes. And so he had one that said, I'm at an urban coffee shop. these black guys are saying how excited they are about Kavanaugh.
Oh, yeah. But Jacob, you know, he's really come out of his shell this week from obnoxious Twitter personality to now national news story. And I always like when these two worlds cross over. And it was really this press conference, and it was like Gateway Pundit ran with this story that he was, you know, intimating that he had something big about Robert Mueller. What actually was his claims and, like, I guess, like the genesis of this ridiculous press conference?
Exactly. So there's a couple like weird tracks, and as you mentioned, a lot of kind of like hucksters floating on the edges of this. The Krasenstein brothers are involved. Of course, they're sort of
they snitched, right?
Twitter personalities on the left. So this all sort of came to a lot of reporters' attention with this anonymous email from this woman who may or may not exist, claiming that Jack Berkman and his associates were offering her tens of thousands of dollars to accuse Mueller of raping her. And so then the Krasensteins, they spilled this open. But Jack Berkman has been claiming for a couple weeks now that he has just umpteen numbers of women who are going to accuse Mueller of sexually assaulting them. And so this all kind of came to a head on Tuesday when Jack revealed that he had worked with this intelligence firm called Surefire Intelligence to find
sounds real.
Women.
And sounds
now,
very
Surefire
legitimate.
Intelligence, if you believe their online documents, they hold out as like a bunch of like ex-Mossad guys who like just are real lethal. Like maybe they do like hits, and you can also hire them to like, you know, track your daughter's boyfriend or something.
It's basically the Sacha Cohen character from his latest show, Colonel Arad Murad. Yeah, that guy.
Exactly. So Jacob was weirdly involved in this, and he was kind of cryptically tweeting about it. And so then one of our reporters at the Daily Beast said, well, Jacob, are you involved with Surefire Intelligence? And he's like, no, I'm just like a Twitter dude. Like, I couldn't handle anything that intense. And it's true, because Jacob turns out to actually be the apparently sole employee of Surefire Intelligence. And this was revealed in comical fashion. The Whois registry for the domain of Surefire Intelligence was registered to Jacob Wohl. The phone number on the site went to his mom's voicemail.
That is top-level OPSEC, you know?
Yeah, Jacob's OPSEC is not up to par. The pictures of his supposed employees turned out to be pictures of model Bar Raffaelli and actor Christoph Waltz from Inglourious Bastards. So, I mean, it was a real house of cards that did not take much to fall down.
The first thing they teach you in Mossad is to use your mother's home address and number for to create your cover.
Exactly. Well, I mean, that's really what Jacob said. He said he's been pressed on why he lied to everyone and why he had this fake company. He said, he's like, these are investigative techniques. You know, I had to stay low profile.
So he has this fucking completely fraudulent, made up private intelligence agency called Surefire Intelligence. But what is the connection with Berkman and these, like, this accusation of Robert Mueller? Were they the people? Was Surefire the intelligence, the outfit that was trying to track down these claims or pay women to make them?
Yeah, so that essentially is how it appears to be. There is a woman on the record, a law professor, who says she got an email from Surefire Intelligence offering her money to accuse Mueller. It seems as though it's not clear sort of who came up with this idea originally, but basically Jack Berkman and sort of contracted Surefire. He seems to have paid them $4,000 according to an invoice. And I think I don't have this in front of me, but I think it had like one of those like operation names, and I think it was Operation Hellfire.
Sounds badass.
So in the end, Jacob eventually did find this woman who is like a very mysterious character herself. She has not spoken herself, but Jacob claims to have met her through some estate work he did for her. It's not clear whether any of that is real. And they have this affidavit, basically, where she alleges Robert Mueller raped her in August 2010 in a New York hotel room. And they put this up on Gateway Pundit, where Jacob works, and then Gateway Pundit panics when no one else gets onto it. Gateway Pundit pulls it down, and then they're like, we are going to investigate Jacob Wohl, you know, without saying, like, parentheses, our own employee. And so, I mean, it's become a real mess.
Will, I saw on Gateway Pundit, like, when for the original article they posted, like, the mod in the comments, who's, you know, definitely not Jim Hoft, was having to be like, just want to say here that Jim Hoft had absolutely nothing to do with this story. This is entirely Jacob, and we have since pulled, or, like, you know, just really running sideways from this as fast as possible.
Jim Hoft also has contracted leprosy somehow. his left pinky finger just fell off.
Jim's gout was acting up. He was not aware of this story. His sleep apnea and gout have been bothering him as of lately.
He's been struggling with dropsy for a long time. It's inhibited his faculties.
And they've since let Jacob go from Gateway Pundit, right?
Yeah, well, they've suspended their relationship.
Oh, okay.
It's a weird thing. It's not clear, like, you know, how much of this is Jacob Wall's actual doing. How much is Jim Hoft trying to pin it on Jacob, all that kind of stuff. I mean, this is all abetted by the Gateway Pundit tradition of, like, having bylines on only half of your articles.
Okay, so that's the background to this incredible show that was put on at the Holiday Inn and suburban D.C. So you attended this press conference featuring Jacob and Jack, J&J, and... You know, as you said, Jack Berkman has done this before, promising that, you know, the government, you know, wet worker who, you know, iced Seth Rich would appear in mask and confess to his crimes and then never showed. They were going to bring this woman, this accuser, to this press conference. And that was also a no-show. They said she landed in D.C. and then got very afraid and went home. But they presented a signed affidavit that, like, spelled her name wrong or something like that.
They had this affidavit, and her name is Caroline with an E in reality. But throughout the affidavit, which incidentally, you know, Jacob claims is the product of just epic amounts of research, he claims they joined historical societies to get documents for this. So, but this woman's name is misspelled repeatedly. And people said to Jack Berkman, they said, you know, how do you spell this lady's name? And he gives the wrong answer. And they're like, well, geez, you know, she signed it this way. And he goes, no. She's got it all wrong. And yeah, so, I mean, it was a real bumbling operation.
But Jacob, like, his time to shine is, you know, when he was asked questions or, you know, slightly pressed on any of this. Already one of the most uncanny looking of these Trump Jugendrind, like, just a featureless, just sort of fetus face fucking,
yeah, PS1 character,
yeah, like, very odd. My favorite takeaway from this is that he kept harping both online and at this press conference about people comparing him to a corn cob or sending him photos of him turning into a corn cob. He was very disturbed by that.
Yes, so this is a reference to, of course, the classic drill tweet in which a guy is getting owned online and shrinks into a corn cob. And so on Tuesday, when all this kicked off, people were tweeting pictures of Jacob as a corn cob. The best one I saw was, now that the FBI is investigating this, Jacob as a corn cob, and then a giant corn thresher with Mueller's face is going by, and Jacob's kind of hiding. So Jacob's been very upset about that. He said this in this video, and then at the press conference, he said, you know, people have been very unfair to me. They photoshopped these pictures of me. One of them was a piece of corn.
Jacob, someone asked him, like, what is your investigative experience? And he said, I've worked on various matters.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's all like obviously, it's all extremely fake. I mean, Jacob is acting like, once again, like with the hedge fund thing, Jacob is kind of like reaching for this kind of like wunderkind status that he doesn't really appear to have earned at all. So in this case, yeah, he claims to have this investigative experience. Jack was defending him because people were saying, you know, Jacob's 20. There's no way he can be doing all this research that he's already clearly messed up in many different ways. And Jack Berkman goes on this whole thing, and he's like, look, Jacob is way smarter than me, you know, which is kind of a backhanded compliment. And then he's saying, you know, Jacob is a child prodigy, and Jacob has surpassed Mozart in his achievements.
Wow. I mean, like... If you want to say Jacob's a bright kid, he's good at what he does, don't let his age fool you, that's one thing. But to immediately reach for Mozart, not to say that Jacob is Mozart's equal, but that Jacob has already surpassed Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, is, I don't know, it's just, you know, why reach for something so obviously untrue?
I don't know. It seems pretty appropriate to me. Don't you remember when a young Mozart was banned from writing symphonies by the Holy Roman Emperor?
Will, would that make you, like, you know, you and all of the other, you know, liberal, biased, fake news journalists, would that make you guys sort of the Salieri to Jacob Wohl's Mozart?
Exactly.
Figure?
You know, yeah. He drives us so crazy and he's so effortless with it. You know, he's just having a good time.
Are you poisoning him right now? Tell us if you're secretly giving him arsenic. can't handle his brilliance.
The other amazing fact or feature of this press conference was apparently Jack Berkman's fly was down the entire time.
Yeah, so this is an unfortunate detail. So he had his fly down the whole time. It was very obvious. There was one point where, you know, God bless him, but he sort of ducked away, and I thought he had realized it, but no, then he came back and it was still down.
Baller.
It was, it was a real debacle. I should say. So they said the witness was going to show. And then as that morning, there was a post on Gateway Pundit saying, no, she's not going to show. But there was a picture, a selfie of her and Jacob, and her face was like almost like scratched out with like the MS Paint spray paint technique.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Jacob claims she landed in DC, freaked out, and then immediately hopped another flight. Like it's like a, like you're at a bus terminal. Like she was just like, no, no, no. The whole thing is a big mess.
So, I mean, like one of the questions Jacob and Jack were asked was, are you both prepared for federal prison? And they said, no, we are not. But like, what kind of like, you know, serious, I mean, legal trouble could young Jacob be looking at here with this, you know?
It looks pretty grim. I mean, so the Gateway Pundit has been getting very defensive about the fact that this case has been referred to the FBI. I mean, their defense literally is going to be like, who made Robert Mueller the king of the world? okay, so we tried to libel the guy and said he's a rapist and maybe committed wire fraud. Like, what's wrong with that? So Gateway Pundit, though, I think will probably skate on First Amendment grounds. But Jacob and Jack may be in a little more trouble. If this stuff about them offering people money to accuse Mueller is true, you know, you start getting into obstruction of justice, wire fraud, you know, if there's any destruction of evidence, lying to the FBI, that kind of stuff. I mean, they say they haven't been contacted by the FBI, but, you know, we'll see. And, you know, speaking of it, you mentioned the people who asked if they were ready to go to prison. There were a decent number of hecklers at this event. And at one point after Jack compared Jacob to Mozart and said he had surpassed Mozart, someone yells, he can't even open an E-Trade account.
Wow, just another fucking Salieri.
I will say, though, that throughout all of this, I do give young Mr. Wohl credit for just absolutely tweeting through it. You know, not backing down in the slightest, just going straight through.
Oh, yeah, he's still saying this is going to happen. Mueller's going down. These women are going to come forward, even though apparently he had some sort of document that made a claim about a rape accusation that happened on a day when Robert Mueller is in the Washington Post having been in fucking jury duty in a different city.
Yeah, that was actually that was a great moment in the press conference where someone asked him, like, well, like, at this date that you're claiming he's in New York raping a woman, he has jury duty in D.C., which is like one of the most bulletproof alibis you can have.
Yeah.
Is being in a courthouse in another state. And he just goes, well, you know, people go to jury duty, then they're out of jury duty. You know, we don't know what they're doing. You know, like he was just basically saying, like, you know, he could have gone to New York directly after the jury duty. You know, It's not all day.
He uses the subterranean tunnels underneath the FBI building.
Yeah. So according to the affidavit, they said they said Mueller, you know, committed this crime on August 2nd, 2010. And then Jacob's proof that Mueller was in New York that day is that he was giving a speech in New York on August 5th. Now, Those are not the same days. And Jacob's like, it was this kind of very like metaphysical thing. He said, you can be doing jury duty and be in another location too.
You can Skype in.
Yeah, exactly.
Like teleconferencing.
Telepresence. Yeah.
Oh, man. That is great. And then I think like the day of the press conference, again, in terms of, you know, just tweeting through it, Jacob had a great tweet that was like a photo taken from, I think, maybe his hotel room at the Holiday Inn. And it was just a photo of an empty street with a bus parked on it. And he was like, this is the bus that's bringing in the mob, all caps. And it was just like, just a bus. Like,
Yeah, I mean, in D.C., it's not unheard of to have a tourist bus, you know, and David was claiming, yeah, when I got there, Jack and David were saying, or excuse me, Jacob were saying, yeah, you know, this is Antifa's here. And instead, it was just True Facts stated himself, Claude Chandler.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Brought a giant inflatable rat.
And there was a great photo of all three of them in an elevator together, looking like the absolute.
This really is. It's a mad, 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 mad world of oafish Twitter scam artists. No, you got the Krasensteins. You got True Facts stated. Jacob Wall. Where's Bill Mitchell when you fucking need him to just parachute in like the fan man? That's going to happen next.
Well, Will, before we let you go, I did just see that, you know, you have a little bit of a late breaking Wall news. Would you like to share that with us? That this is just up now.
Yeah. So the Daily Beast is the Daily Beast exclusive from our reporters Adam Ronsley and Lachlan Marquet. It is they've talked to a woman who says she was ripped off by Jacob's fake intelligence firm, Surefire Intelligence. Basically, she was trying to recover a Hummer that was seemingly stolen from her, and she hired Jacob's firm, thinking these were going to be a bunch of ex-Mossad, you know, kick-ass guys, and instead she got Jacob, who took $1,200 from her and disappeared. And so the morning of this press conference, our reporters were talking to this woman, and she was saying, you know, okay, I'm going back and forth with Jacob, and I'm saying, hey, like, you need to pay me back or whatever. And Jacob is just freaking out because he's terrified this story is going to break before the press conference. And he's saying, he's like, look, I'll get you like a $20,000 settlement. Just calm down. So it was pretty funny.
I love the idea of like hiring a just like private intelligence agency to like find your missing car. You know, like I need ex-Mossad commandos to, you know.
Yeah, that's very kind of like I feel like you're subtly saying like, by the way, like shoot the guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, just the idea of like thinking you're hiring this ex-Mossad, and then you get this kind of like off-brand Encyclopedia Brown. You know, it's a hipster coffee shop. God.
Best of luck to Jacob Wall. I mean, I may be hiring Surefire Intelligence for my own purposes. I'd be interested in looking into that. You know,
honestly, I would just like them to come to my birthday party. Just mingle, like, just say things. It would be hilarious. They'd make amazing party favors.
I should say, Jacob does not have a private investigator license, something that it's kind of legally dicey. And so, you know, we'll have to see. He may also have some exposure on that.
Did Veronica Mars have a private PI's license? Actually, I think she probably did. Her dad did. Yeah, okay. Well, one thing is surefire, and that's that Will Sommer is intelligent and one of our favorite guests. Will, thank you so much for giving us this wall-to-wall Jacob Wall coverage.
Thank you for hitting our back wall.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers, Will.
Bye.
Okay. Once again, big thanks to Will Sommer of the Daily Beast. All right. So we teased it in the opening. I hope you're ready for it. Hope you're ready for Tuesday for the democracy that is coming. You can't stop what's coming.
It's a bukkake of electoral voting.
You can't stop what's coming, and Tuesday is election day. Will the Democrats take back the House and Senate, or will they be stymied in their efforts to hold our tyrannical orange chimpinator? Wait, chimp is Bush. Oh,
chimp is Bush. Cheetoinator.
Will they be stymied in their efforts to hold the thief-in-chief accountable for his many crimes against
the commander in Cheeto himself,
our republic? Virgil,
who here's got midterm mania?
I do.
I sure do. With the complication of Gallup polio.
This is already, I already want to die.
All 435 seats in the House are up. 35 Senate seats are being contested. 36 governorships will be decided. Thousands of state and local seats will be on the ballot, along with hundreds of key ballot measures. On the federal level, this election can determine whether Republicans continue to legislate with unified government or whether Democrats take at least one chamber along with its subpoena powers. But on the state level, this election in 2020 will determine who gets to gerrymander the other party out of existence, whether it will be minorities and young people who get disenfranchised, or whether big locks are placed around white-gated communities every election day. Trump's approval rating, mid to low 40s, Democrats up in the generic ballot in the neighborhood of 8%, but people have a huge net positive view of the economy. Gallup found that number to be 43. by which people approve of the economy, it's really uncharted territory that we're in, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, usually you don't have a situation where the economy is doing well and the president is this relatively unpopular. He really is a special boy.
Wait one second. I forgot to give a disclaimer before this election special. If you are a tanky anarchist or serious communist socialist and not a petty bourgeois reformist, turn off now.
Yeah, you're just going to make yourself mad. I mean, just, and also, I do mostly do this for fun. This and baseball are my two spectator sports. I don't really know if, I don't actually think it matters, really, what's going to happen here.
Oh, I think it matters, buddy.
Yeah, we'll see.
It matters, all right.
You like both because you're just a big George Will head. Yeah, this is the middle of the Venn diagram. Yeah, it's George.
Me and him just hanging out, drinking chamomile tea, and not wearing jeans. Because that is a sign of cultural degeneracy.
The views presented in this episode about electoralism do not necessarily reflect that of Chapo Trap House management. Continue, Virgil.
The blocks that have shifting since 2016. One story, Rust Belt white working class voters returning. You saw that in Connor Lamb's victory earlier this year in the Pennsylvania special election. That's deep red territory.
Turning to who?
The Democratic Party.
Okay.
What else you're seeing? Suburban shitheads who normally vote Republican are switching to the Democrats. You saw that in Alabama's special Senate election last year.
Well, they were running against
an actual pedophile.
The pedophile,
it was very close.
Yeah, it really was.
It was really close.
And you also see a fired up Democratic base everywhere.
On this show.
In the battle for the House, a lot of the places where Democrats are competing are traditionally conservative suburban districts that flipped to Clinton in 2016, in part because of changing demographics and because of some of these aforementioned white suburbanites who voted for Romney just don't like Trump. And that's a big reason why his approval rating is so low compared to the economic indicators.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, what we've seen a lot of these special election and off-year election results is a return to 2016 presidential margins. Takes Georgia's 6th district, the John Ossoff race. Ossoff lost by 2% of the vote. Hillary Clinton lost by 2% of the vote. Story was the same in Virginia state legislative races last year, where the seats that Democrats won were seats that had pretty much gone for Hillary. So in that regard, a lot of these special election results were kind of a regression to the mean. And the real question is, did 2016 represent a durable realignment? If every district in the country merely replicated the 2016 presidential election results, Democrats would fall a bit short of winning back the House because of how gerrymandered the country is.
And I'm going to say it right here. I've gone back and forth, and I know I have a bet with Virgil on this issue and over the months, and the stuff, special elections and generic ballots. I've sort of come around in the past and said that maybe I think Virgil's right, and I'm going to say it now, 3 days before, I actually do think that the House is going to stay for the Republicans by a very narrow margin.
Really?
Whoa.
And the reason I say that is because, I mean, I'm not obviously as into the details of this as other people, Virgil included, but I read a little bit about it, and the thing that I see a lot of people saying is an analyst saying is that the thing that is extraordinary about this race is how wide the aperture of possible outcomes is. They're saying you could see anything from a narrow House Republican majority to a huge Democratic surge, because so many races are within 1 or 2 points, apparently, and it's all going to come down to where the late breakers switch. And if they go Democrat in any kind of concerted way, then they could win 100 seats. If they in that same uniform way go Republican, they might hold on thanks to gerrymandering and voter suppression. And I don't know, I'm not really seeing it. I'm not seeing what you'd need to see to indicate that there's going to be that much of a titanic rupture with like in terms of turnout and voting in a lot of these races to matter. And so I think they're going to hold on.
Matt sticking out strong position. The chalk bet, of course, is that the Democrats take back the House,
yes,
but the Senate remains GOP controlled.
I think so, yeah.
That's the chalk bet.
Yeah,
The
chalk, you know.
We didn't bet on any chalk.
It's a gambling term. It means that they're the more likely, like they're the overdog. The overdog positions are that the Dems win the House and the GOP
named after that famously reliable and durable material, chalk.
it's, you know, in betting house, they would write out the lines in chalk because it would change.
If you're doing like March Madness and like the chalk would be the numbers of the teams that are ranked. So if a 2 plays a 15, you pick 2, that's picking the chalk because it's a higher, it's like the lower number.
One thing is for sure, though, there are 3 possible outcomes on Tuesday night. One, Matt's hell world prediction that the Republicans retain control of the House and Senate. The blue wave crashes into the levees of gerrymandering and rolls back.
And let's not forget just shitty candidates. Like, because people talk about how horrified everyone is by Trump, and then people get so mad at non-voters, but who are they supposed to vote for in these specific races? Because that's the real issue. You can hate Trump all you want, but he's not on the ballot as much as they want to act like he is. You have to actually go out and vote for these motherfuckers. And what? They're a bunch of CIA assholes and you know, former prosecutors and stuffed shirts, the same fucking scumbags they recruited in 2006. It's going to just require such a break with precedent and such a push against the economic tides to get everyone out to vote for these stiffs that I just think they're going to come up a little short.
So I mentioned the chalk bet, of course, is Democrats retake the House, Republicans retain control of the Senate, and, you know, the, shall we say, most optimistic, don't get mad at me, is that the Democrats take the House and Senate, and Trump and the Republican Party are fully repudiated in a just tidal wave election.
Yeah.
If you want some evidence against Hellworld thesis, if you want to feel counter Hellworld right now, keep this in mind. Democrats need to take 25 seats to win back the House. 2 of those were special elections in deep blue districts. That's already 2, down to 23. Pennsylvania, by court ordered, had all of its districts, and that was a very gerrymandered state, redrawn. Democrats should net about 3 seats from that right off the bat, no questions asked. That brings you down to just 20 seats they have to win. New Jersey, these Republicans who voted for the tax bill, which just fucks everyone's property taxes there by ending the federal deduction for their state property taxes, they're looking at losing 3 to 4 seats there. That's down to 16. Then you have to look at the districts where Republicans, national Republicans, have just pulled the plug weeks ago, just cut off all funding. That's going to what? A half a dozen, perhaps up to 10 seats. That means that really when you're talking about the races that will decide this thing, where it is, you know, the very large number of races where both parties are competitive, which is perhaps over 70 seats right now, Democrats just need about 5 of that pool to win. So while there is a wide range of possible outcomes, where you look at the races that are pretty much done for right now, it's almost certain that the Democrats take back the House, even if there's a systemic polling error, even if all of these undecided voters break in one direction uniformly across the country just by sheer numbers.
Okay, well, that's a possibility.
That's one data point to add in the data column if you're keeping score at home. Please, please, please have your own data notebook on hand for the election night live stream, by the way.
Yeah,
we'll be giving you lots of data, too much data to just, you know, have unorganized out there.
I'm going to ask that everyone, like you're at a baseball game, I want everyone to keep score. I mean, you have to have a nice piece of graph paper, and you need to write the result of every race as it comes in.
Because keep in mind, that is fundamentally what politics is, a game that we watch on television.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is what it is in America. It is a fun distraction, a way to just sort of get our energy out, and then they keep running things and cooking the earth.
Another thing I also want to point out right now is I don't know if you've been following the New York Times upshot polling.
I have not.
They do real-time polls where you can watch the results come in. It's a novelty. It's fine. But the benefit here is they've been polling a wide variety of districts in the country, and what they've found is not only are Democrats doing extremely well in places where the national Republicans have cut off the money, they have fighting chances in a wide array of red districts. Karen Handel, who beat John Ossoff, is an even bet at this point. Steve King,
both
Greg Gianforte. Peter King, who's apparently running television ads right now.
I was stunned to see those ads.
I just saw them on the local news.
Because that guy hasn't had
the
campaign in decades. And now he's out there like, hey, a blue-collar conservative.
How about Dave Bratt, the Tea Party hero, who took down Eric Cantor?
Yeah, he's in trouble.
And I also love when Dave Bratt, when he took down Eric Cantor, everyone was like, you know, this is the real principled libertarian conservative. as soon as he's under any pressure, just going full racist against his opponent.
Credible polls are finding these Republican incumbents in Republican districts that voted for Trump at 45-46%, which as an incumbent, you don't want to be beneath 50%.
That's true.
And with their Democrat opponent polling about the same amount.
Just real quick, back to Peter King. It is incredible to me to see a Peter King political ad on TV.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because he
runs that fucking
he's carved his name
island.
Into that fucking district, yeah. You know, like he just, you know, Pete was here, yeah. You know, like X to X dates. In the ad that is now playing on New York City local news and television, he goes, as Matt said, I consider myself a blue collar conservative. I understand people need help, whether it's 9/11, Hurricane Sandy, or MS-13. And he was like, you know, honestly, sometimes, let's say a nationalist guerrilla movement in a foreign country also needs help. They need government
funding. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes
well.
You need some Tex and Armalites kick the queen out of your country.
Yeah.
You also have races like Chris Collins in upstate New York, the congressman who was indicted. He is.
I think they're both going to win. I think him and Duncan. I think the two indicted Republicans are both going to win, which is, I think, really funny.
Duncan Hunter is an interesting one because he is running just an explicit white nationalist race at this point and has sent out mailers saying his opponent's a Muslim.
Which his opponent is Arab, but he is a Christian.
Yeah.
But he's just like, look at his name. Come on.
Yeah, no, that's straight up his argument that he's running ads for.
It's going to work. I'm telling you.
No. I mean, well, that's the other thing is a lot of these California seats, Republicans have held them for a long time, but because of changing demographics, on the presidential level, they flip to Hillary Clinton. And a number of these seats, like Bebe Waller's in California, especially in Southern California, a number of them are probably going to flip to the Democrats. Republicans only have what? You can count them on one hand, the number of House seats they have remaining.
Virgil, so like obviously there's
Dana Rohrabacher might lose.
There's too much elections going, too many races.
So
there's
many
so
elections.
So many elections.
So
the
many
elections
races.
Are never ending.
So many races. What are, in your opinion, what are like the marquee matchups to watch on
Tuesday? Yeah, what do you need
well,
to keep your eye on?
Let me get to that in a second. But okay. I mean, I still want to come back to this point about the National House race. Like there's too much to really get into the weeds with these House races. But I think it's helpful if we have just an overall theory of what it's going to be. And I think, you know, in 2016, obviously the Democrats got owned real bad. And what's different this time around is Hillary Clinton isn't on the ballot. 2016 saw a large number of third party votes, write-ins and undervotes. Trump got 46% of the popular vote. Hillary only got 48%. And I think what should give Democrats hope is that in 2016, Republican House candidates overall got 3% more of the vote than their presidential nominee. So a substantial number of people voted for their Republican congressional candidate but refused to vote for Donald Trump. And the question I have is, do these voters this time around, if they're still turned off by Trump, which I think most of them are if you look at his approval rating, do they do the same thing? Do they vote for their local reasonable Republican, or do they reject the party now and say, all right, I've got to vote for a Democrat? And I have a guess there. I really think it's the latter. There's no question after nearly 2 years of unified government that the GOP is Trump's party. There's no such thing as a never Trump Republican. No. That's a bullshit and a lie. Hillary Clinton isn't on the ballot anymore, and she isn't on television anymore running ads saying that Trump isn't a real Republican.
That was so funny.
That was
good.
Great.
That was great.
Oh, no.
You see, it's okay that I'm going to guarantee that I have Republican Congress and I won't be able to do anything as president, but at least I'm guaranteeing that I beat Trump.
And remember, any Republican who didn't hug Trump pretty much got primaried out.
Yeah.
And like even the ones in swing states, even in a state that Hillary Clinton won, these guys have figured out that, my only chance to win here is to hug Trump and get his base to turn out.
Yeah. No, you got to get the base.
So I think if House Republicans are held to this limit, if they get 46% of the popular vote, Democrats get in the neighborhood of 54%, which is in line with most national polling, Democrats would be the overwhelming favorite to win back the House. And I would say at this point, the odds of Republicans keeping the House are lower than the odds of Trump winning a few days out from Election Day in 2016.
You hear that, Libs? Don't draw that warm bath and get sharpen those razors yet. So, Virgil, I have to ask, what is your favorite race?
My favorite race?
Yeah.
I don't know if I have a favorite race.
Mine is the Turks, obviously.
Why?
You know, the great architecture, those kebabs, all that great food, the bread they got. Just Yeah. Oh, they love, yeah, cats. Oh, my God. Keddie, please see that movie if you're into cats.
One thing we can go over, and I think if you want to, you know, zoom in on some of these races, we can go over the Senate.
Yeah.
Yes. This is one of the most brutal Senate maps either party has faced in decades. Democrats are defending 24 seats, many of which are in deep red territory, 10 of which are in states that Donald Trump won. And this is the class that was elected in 2012 when Obama walked to a convincing reelection victory. And the big story was still these Tea Party fuck-up candidates like Todd Akin and Richard Murdoch, who lost races that otherwise probably would have been won by less erratic
Republican.
For saying
stuff that is just so adorably quaint.
I think the idea that
you lost your fucking Senate race for saying the stuff about legitimate rape or whatever.
I think,
like,
the body has ways of shutting that down.
It's like, oh, that's so cute that anyone gave a shit about that. In the long ago.
Here's the thing. This time around, Republicans don't have to worry about the Tea Party anymore because their entire party is consumed by the Tea Party and white nationalism. So it no longer matters how insane your candidates are. If anything, it might be a boon to you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You get those Q dipshits who show up to all the Trump rallies of the fucking barbecue to vote instead of just tweet.
So to win back the Senate, thanks to Doug Jones, Democrats need to net just 2 seats. And the easiest way to do this is to hold all their seats and take 2 of the 4 competitive Republican seats. That was the arithmetic in January. It's the arithmetic now. So why don't we start by looking at where Democrats are on the offense? And, of course, the big one, howdy, y'all, Texas Senate race. You all know this one. On the one side, you have Beto O'Rourke, tall, toothy, woke, skateboarding member of the Choom Gang. And on the other, you have this sort of blobfish whose photo you might see in a clickbait gallery with the caption, a housewife found what in her toilet? The case for Beto is he's outraised Cruz by a big margin. He fields an army of canvassers, over 10,000, the campaign claims, and that he's recognizable as a human being in a state that's rapidly growing more diverse. But here's the case against, and it's a pretty heavy case. Texas hasn't elected a Democrat senator in 30 years. Trump won the state by less than Romney, but he won convincingly nonetheless with 52% of the vote. Cruz has led in every poll since mid-September, often putting up numbers above 50%, which is where he wants to be. Mm. In aggregate, the polls show he has a consistent lead in the neighborhood of 48%. And despite his diversity, Texas is still a very red state. Cruz and Beto have the unified vote of their respective parties, but guess which party's base is just bigger? Texas has a lot of Latino voters, but a lot of them are basically just country club Republicans. And the sort of habitual non-voters that could theoretically put Beto over the top are kept disenfranchised by Texas's Jim Crow-style laws, where, if this is true, if you're a community organizer who wants to register other people to vote, you have to be deputized in any county.
Wait, you're telling
that
me,
you're telling me
in Texas, like, you have to get state approval to raise a posse?
Yes, basically.
To raise a voting posse?
Yes.
Damn big government.
But the X factor here is that there's been a surge in early voting in Texas. Hispanic voters are up 200% over 2014. Voters under 30 are up 500% over 2014.
Holy shit.
And the early vote, and this is what's shocking to me, the early vote in Texas' biggest counties is currently above the total vote, that's election day and early vote combined, in those counties in 2014. More people have voted so far, with a few days out from Election Day, than they voted total 4 years ago.
Conventional wisdom holds that early voting always favors Democrats or the more...
It depends on the state, because in some states, Republicans have more disciplined, you know, early voting operations. Normally, Democrats do well in the early vote in-person voting, but Republicans do well in the mail ballots.
You know, for me personally, Beto versus Ted is the most exciting race that's going on right now.
Yeah,
it's, you know, I think Cruz is going to win. So I'm not trying to, like, I really don't want to get my hopes up about this. But, like, again, standard qualified caveat that if Beto wins, he's going to be a normal milquetoast Democrat.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to expect, like, you know, he's not going to build socialism in Texas, but
he's going to build full gay space communism, and he's going to guillotine the people you don't like.
he's going to make Gritty the new sheriff of Texas. He's going to make Gritty the head of the Texas Rangers. But honestly, like, for me personally, if I lived in Texas, I would vote for Beto.
Well, of course, because you might get to see Ted Cruz eat shit, and who doesn't want to see that?
Exactly. Like, just everything else the way you feel about, like, voting or electoralism or the Democratic Party aside, as we've said before, when it comes to buying our book or doing anything politically, spite is a perfectly good motivation.
Yes, absolutely.
And
100%.
I'm sorry, someone like Ted Cruz, like, Beto is the lesser evil. I'm sorry.
Oh, no,
he really is. Like, the thing is,
well, he wasn't fucking born from a meteorite.
Even if the Beto is a median candidate, I would argue that the median Democratic candidate today is way better than the median Democratic candidate 4 years ago or any previous cycle. I mean, I think the median candidate actually has signed on for Medicare for All.
I mean, on paper, I would actually agree with that. The positions of this class of candidates is well to the left of even the most recent cycle. But I have very little faith that it would actually mean anything once the rubber hits the road. And
well, that's really the thing. And, you know, funnily enough, earlier this week, I saw our friend of the show, Neera Tanden, sound off about candidates supporting Medicare for All, saying, well, let's just see who wins and who loses.
Feeling like Neera Tanden.
Which, you know, that's great that your politics is just craven all the time and fear of
fucking
a tiny sliver of voter who probably hates you anyway. But the thing is, this isn't the real Medicare for All fight. It's easy to say you support Medicare for All because nobody knows what that means. Yeah. There isn't a fucking bill. Mm-mm. There's the insurance companies haven't plowed money into this fight yet.
Yeah.
And it's still a glimmer in Bernie's eye.
By the way, on Tuesday night on the election stream, I'm not sure about Matt and Virgil, but I can promise anyone watching, I will be gone off that Molly, off those Zans, feeling like white Neera.
So that's easy enough. And I do, and this is also an aside, I think we should take a little victory lap because I read the other week that in the swing districts, counting up the Democratic TV ads, nearly 50% are about healthcare. What percentage is about Russia?
Yeah, that's true. And well, that has been the Achilles heel for Republicans because they could run on the economy and a lot of people are sort of baffled why they're running on MS-13 and hysteria when they could be running on the good economy. And it's because if it's a bread and butter election, the economy is honestly kind of an abstract concept, whereas they are literally trying to strip people with pre-existing conditions of health care in the moment. Their health care votes are noxious. If people know what they are, they're against them. Fucking dumbass turtle man Mitch McConnell 2 weeks ago just says, well, it's weird. We got a hell of a deficit here all of a sudden. I wonder how that happened. We're going to have to take care of that by cutting some Social Security and Medicare.
Which made it into every fucking ad
for
every fucking Democratic candidate.
Yes.
I'm sorry, if Russia is this existential issue for our fucking democracy, you'd think they'd be spending more than 1% of their ad money talking about it.
Yeah, I think everyone, God bless them, this is a thing we were saying, they were going to run on Russia, and just, I guess, because they're not that incompetent or that delusional, they realized it wasn't a winner at some point and dropped it, which is very good.
But back to Texas, he'd have my support, too, because he skateboards. It's like voting for Bart Simpson. It's cool.
I think the main question about Beto Cruz, Beto, would or wouldn't?
Yeah, would.
What?
He's daddy.
What?
He's Matt, okay.
What do you think?
Yeah.
He's very
daddy.
I like
daddy. The salt pepper hair more than anything, honestly.
He's tall, you know, and that's comforting.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, and Matt and I saw Beto on TV the other day, I realized if he weren't, like, tall, nobody would give a shit about him.
It's true.
If there weren't that, like, physical contrast between him and Ted Cruz.
American presidents almost always over 6 feet tall.
It's very true.
There you go.
We haven't had a manlit president since Madison. That's how long.
Yeah,
it's
if
been.
He were a man,
Michael Bloomberg. Is that, my God, is that Michael Bloomberg's music? Is that the Lollipop Kingdom soundtrack I hear coming through?
If he were a manlit, if he were built like a spark plug, nobody would care.
Yeah, or if he was perfectly round, not going to happen.
The one last thing, you know, those numbers are pretty shocking about the early vote here. And it still is worth noting. I'm sure the early vote is also pretty strong in these white, more rural, exurban Republican areas,
right, yeah,
too. It's definitely going to be a base election. Republicans are going to vote because guess what? They always do that. Mm-hmm. That's their fucking hobby, baseball and voting. just like Matt. And so there is a question, is that early vote, which is, you know, demographics that are very good for Democrats, is that just cannibalizing their election day
vote?
Yeah,
see, that's what I don't know. That's what I wonder, is that like they might have just shot their wad.
It's why you can't read that much into it, because the early voting did look good for Hillary last time around.
That's true.
The other thing is, you know, if you want to believe certain polls, some of them do have, you know, Beto hasn't led, but they still have him down by just 3%, like 49-46. That's still a race.
Margin of error, baby.
There's enough polls to suggest that Cruz just has a lead, but just it's one systemic polling error from O'Rourke winning.
See, that's the thing, is the systemic issue, is that because we've talked about this, polling is dependent. It's not like you can call anybody all day. You don't have a poll until you have a likely voter screen. That's what makes it like legible. And that is basically, as much as they want to say it's empirical, largely a guess. You're guessing who the likely voter
is. Even the most modern polling outfits and data shops still have not penetrated even slightly Snapchat or FetLife. So,
and I will say, I mean,
I cannot take anything seriously until we get the a dungeon daddy swinger hot wife demographic.
And keep this in mind, Nate Cohn, New York Times, said, looking at the early voting data, that he feels very, very good about the likely voter screen that they've been employing at their New York Times upshot polls. And the most recent run in Texas showed O'Rourke down by like 8, 9, 10. But other polls do have it a tighter race. So, what do you think?
Cruz is probably going to win.
Yeah.
Gotta say, Cruz.
I mean, I would love nothing better than to be like, "Oh, we were so wrong about this one." You know, I would feel so ashamed.
I mean, it's tough to predict all of these, but I mean, Cruz is. I think it's going to be basically Trump's margin again. Like, he'll get 51-52% of the vote. Pretty tight.
We're not watching that acceptance, that victory speech, by the way.
Yeah, we are. It's gonna be on the Twitch stream. We're gonna play it like a horror video game.
Disgusting bulbous slug man.
Moving on, Tennessee Senate race. This is an open seat currently filled by the retiring Bob Corker, # resistance hero. Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn is a Republican nominee. She's hated by members of her own party in the way Cruz is. Corker himself and the GOP governor of the state refused to say if they voted for her. But I believe they both endorsed her, so it's all a sham. Former Governor Phil Bredesen's the Democrat. He's a Southern centrist of some sort, right?
He really hates deficits. He has promised to go to Washington to balance the budget.
There's another classic deficit race, and that's also a good contrast because Tennessee and Texas, both red states, obviously. Tennessee, the guy's tack is, you know, roll up sleeves, both sides, reach across the aisle, deficit shit. And Beto O'Rourke is like, no, fuck it. I'm just going to play to my base.
Yeah.
But, you know, Phil Bredesen, he, like, in terms of reaching across the aisle, he went the extra mile here, releasing a statement after the Kavanaugh hearing saying he would vote to confirm.
Amazing.
Hell yeah.
One thing that you don't have to do.
He did not have to do that.
And he pissed off the own people volunteering for his campaign. Yeah.
Georgetown
I'm not
Prep.
Gonna support you anymore.
And I believe his fundraising just dried up after that, too. It was significantly impacted. Just
whoops.
Idiot move.
Devil's triangle.
Because anyone who wants Kavanaugh to be on the Supreme Court will just vote for the party that would fucking confirm him.
Why not? Why take a chance? Just get the person you know would vote for.
We all know
it's
what
it's
happened.
Like they say at the end of Casino. Yeah. Why take a chance?
Why take a chance?
It doesn't matter. That's like Susan Collins saying in 2016, you know, oh, I could vote for Garland. Well, it doesn't fucking matter because he's not even coming up for a fucking hearing.
Yeah.
Trump won the state by 2-1. Nearly 2-1. And while the race was tight as recently as September, Blackburn has opened the lead in the past couple of weeks, anywhere from 4-10%.
Yeah, I know. That fucking old bitch is going down. Phil Bredesen, just retire. Literally dig your own grave and crawl into it.
Well, Will, would you volunteer a prediction?
I mean,
volunteer states?
I know nothing about this race. I followed none of it at all. I was worried for a second there that Matt called Marsha Blackburn an old bitch.
No.
I don't do that.
I only call men bitches.
Okay.
And Phil Bredesen is absolutely
I mean,
one.
I think this is just, you know, Tennessee. The Republicans going to win.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to agree with that. But here's some more fertile ground for the Democrats going into the two races that were always going to be the ones in their narrow path to the majority that they would absolutely win. Arizona Senate race. Another hashtag resistance hero, Jeff Flake, is retiring. Arizona would have two open seats, by the way, if the resistance demiurge, John McCain, had retired when he was dying of cancer, when he still fucking held that seat while he was in a fucking hospital bed and could not vote. So instead, a seat will be held by an appointed Republican who will vote for everything Trump wants for the next 2 years.
Hell resistance. God, it's so fucking principled.
Instead, so there's one race. Martha McSally's a Republican. She was the first female fighter pilot to fly in combat, so she has a very...
She was a bomber pilot.
I read fighter pilot.
She says fighter pilot, but apparently it was a bomber.
Stealing like, Maverick Valor?
All the guys with the stupid hats with all the fucking like the
golden laurels on it.
All the gold laurels. They're all mad at her for that.
Because the first female fighter pilot is running in Kentucky.
Is she? I didn't know that.
McGrath, I believe.
The first lady fighter pilot.
In any event, Martha McSally killed a bunch of Hajis. She's a very high woke star. But
the K to D ratio is off the charts.
Well, if you're a bomber, that is the ultimate K to D ratio. Yeah.
Very high woke
Enola
score.
Enola Gay, unsurpassed.
But her opponent, Kristen Sinema, also has a high woke score. She's bisexual. She used to be a Green Party activist and an anarchist against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. She handed out leaflets depicting Uncle Sam and a U.S. soldier as skeletons with the caption, "You can help us push back U.S. terror in Iraq and the Middle East." In other words, she used to be cool.
Kristen Sinema is honestly one of the more interesting characters in all of politics right now, because she sort of like came out of this like Occupy anarchist where she was literally like on that like America KKK Bush Hitler.
She's like a freaking dumpster diver.
Yeah, and since then has gotten significantly worse.
She's like a
huge
blue dog.
Hawk.
She's like even socially conservative. She's very conservative.
I'm sorry. Don't get mad at me. Not exactly a check in the pro column for being an anarchist or involved with Occupy Wall Street in any regard.
No. It's a mixed record at best, I think we can say.
Sinema, I mean, it's better than the current Sinema, because after she was elected to the U.S. House, she discovered something even cooler than anti-imperialism, reaching across the aisle and finding common ground to reduce the deficit. Her first ad was about the deficit.
It featured like skeletons coming out of a grave and like, you know, clawing for fresh bodies and meat, but instead of America KKK soldiers, it was, entitlement spending.
She's a blue dog, as you said, which is the thing that went on 100% should no longer exist. She's a new Democrat, and she's a member of some fucking thing called the Problem Solvers Caucus. Which I like to think, which is like a bipartisan caucus, but in my mind, it's just like folks who meet up and do puzzles together.
It's exactly...
Wouldn't that be adorable?
It's exactly as effective as when Tracy and Jenna formed the Problem Solvers on 30 Rock. They get as much done.
Here's the thing. I don't really think you have to be this right wing to win as a Democrat in Arizona. Trump only got 49% of the vote there. Flake himself was only elected by about 3% of the votes. Most people don't care about the fucking Democrats.
And
I don't
she
know
still got
she's appealing
for
to.
her hippie shit by McSally. All McSally's ads are all about how she was this America hating hippie.
Yes, no. McSally runs these ads showing Chris's cinema wearing a pink tutu protesting the war, contrasting with her showing a different kind of skeleton. All the skeletons she fucking racked up. So it's like cinema gets the worst of both worlds.
Yeah.
The progressives are fucking hate her and don't trust her. And everyone else thinks she's still the fucking 2002 cinema.
Perfect. That's the best way to do it.
But despite that, she's neck and neck with McSally. She's trading leads of a few points with each polls. She probably still has the edge here, but it really depends which polls you want to believe.
I think she's going to win, actually. I think cinema will win.
I mean, to disentangle two things, I in this race endorse writing in 2002 Kristen Sinema. when that would be my vote, but I also agree. I actually think she's going to edge it out just because of how poorly, relatively, Trump did in this state.
Yeah.
Will?
Again, I'm going to follow your guys' lead on this one. I'm going to say Krista gets it and is worth voting for just based on, you know, bisexual awareness and visibility alone.
Of course.
Will trying to have it both ways. Nevada Senate race, the last one, probably the most vulnerable GOP-held seat in a state that went for Hillary Clinton, a state Obama won twice, where Harry Reid masterminded his own tough re-election during the Tea Party wave year of 2010.
Picked his own candidate.
Polls showed he was toast, but he stuck it out and won convincingly.
He picked his own opponent. It was amazing.
He picked his own opponent, and he built this turnout machine. But here's the thing. Senator Dean Heller is very much so in this one. The polls are all over the map, but Nevada's a tough state to poll. Harry Reid built that turnout machine, getting these union workers in the hospitality industry in Clark County to the polls.
Culinary workers, Local 226, holla back, y'all.
Delivering the state to Hillary by just a couple points, when, in my mind, she otherwise would have lost if it hadn't been for that disciplined turnout operation. But these elections tend to be close in Nevada, and the Democrat, Jackie Rosin, hasn't locked up Latino voters to the extent that she probably needs to win. Heller spent the past couple years fighting for a chunk of this constituency, helped by the popular Latino Republican governor, Brian Sandoval. One poll showed Heller up by like 8 points, and everyone got mad at it. Other polls show Rosin up.
Ooh, that is, I got to say, when they did the Obamacare vote, I thought Heller was toast. And the fact that he's still in it is just more proof of Democratic incompetence.
Well, this was the race that he's an incumbent senator, so they're going to, you know, stick with an incumbent. And the race that everyone knew was on the table for years.
If I'm going to hold true to my half trollish posture that the Republicans will hold the House, if that were to happen, that in the world where that happens, then Heller wins. So I'm going to say Heller hilariously holds on.
In this one, you want to roll the dice?
Here's what I'm going to say about this race. Very tight, you know, hard to say what's going to happen. However, what I do know will be crucial is where the support of Las Vegas-based small business Western Stage Props. As Western Stage Prop goes, so goes the state of Nevada.
And what is their support?
I believe it's the
Egyptian President Mubarak.
Yes.
I'm going to say Democrat wins.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to say, I think that there's a lot of durability to Harry Reid's turnout machine. I remember him from like every right-wing meme. Not saying that he's stupid, but saying that he's scary.
That was hilarious. Oh, Harry Reid. Honestly, he is a piece of shit, but I miss him. I mean, compared to Chuck Schumer, give me a break. But yeah, no, if Rosin wins, though, it'll be those fucking culinary workers. It'll be those union people doing it.
Based on my predictions, if they win two of those, and again, I think Beto is very much so still in this and could really surprise people on election day. If they win three, that would be enough if they can hold all the following seats. You have the deep red state Dem senators, Joe Manchin in West Virginia, Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, Joe Donnelly in Indiana, Claire McCaskill in Missouri, and John Tester in Montana. These are all states that went for Trump by double digits. He won by over 40% in West Virginia alone. Hillary Clinton got something in the neighborhood of 26%. Oh, man. And this is a state that Bill Clinton won. But fortunately for Manchin, that's the state where Republicans probably have the weakest candidate, the state attorney general whose wife is a lobbyist and who promised to stop lobbying if he wins.
It could have been fucking Blankenship. I'm still pissed that we didn't get Blankenship in there.
Manchin, who voted for Kavanaugh and really sucks, has led in every single nonpartisan poll in this race, and he remains personally popular there, probably having built his reputation as governor during the Sagal mine disaster.
Yeah, no, he'll win. That one to me is a no-brainer. Manchin's got that one locked up.
I would say, you know, Manchin's in the driver's seat, but you never know. His opponents get out the vote operation in which they bus potential Manchin voters to the bottom of a mine and then blow it up. You never know what could happen there.
I just want to know who Boyd Crowder is supporting. I know he's from Kentucky, but they're right next to each other.
Interesting. Blankenship has attempted to get on the ballot, but I believe he failed.
King! King!
I can't believe
Blankenship didn't win with his slogan, "He killed my ma, he killed my pa, but I will vote for him." What the fuck?
I'm going to agree. Manchin.
Yep.
In Montana, John Tester was elected in the blue wave of 06. He held a seat in a tough race in 2012. He also led every nonpartisan poll, but like West Virginia, not always by a huge margin. He's a farmer and a butcher. He brings his own meat to Washington. He lost three fingers in a meat grinder accident. He wears a crew cut and
maybe cool off on the meat then. He's literally costing you your own body.
He wears a crew cut and a flannel shirt that say to Montanans, "I'm a big oaf like you."
Tester, I honestly just from the fact that I haven't heard a lot about the race tells me that he seems to be in the driver's seat there. I think he's going to win.
And also in a red state, voted against Kavanaugh without very much fuss.
That was pretty impressive. Like, it wasn't even really ever even a suspense thing. He just was like, yeah, no, I'm not voting for him.
And this is as well a state where Greg Gianforte is in trouble.
That's
and
true,
polling
yeah.
even under 50%.
Yeah. So I think Tester holds
it. I will say I would make my judgment based on my limited experience with the state of Montana. I think the crucial issue that, based on the sort of straw poll of bumper stickers I saw driving around that state, the most crucial issue in Montana is how many wolves you're legally allowed to kill. Some people are very, very angry that they're not allowed to kill more wolves. Some people want to save the wolves, but honestly, the kill the wolves vote is much bigger in Montana.
I don't think anyone supports not killing wolves.
Yeah, no, let's get rid of them, folks.
I'm a friend of the wolves.
No, let's get rid of those guys.
In Montana, I mean.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, you gotta. If you want to win, you gotta play the game. Don't be a child.
No, Tester will get reelected, and then he will not serve out his term because he will choke to death at a Ruth's Chris.
I think Tester wins, and a few months into his term, falls into a wheat thresher,
or eaten by wolves, carried away by wolves.
I should have let them kill more of them.
I do think we need a new standard when gauging these senators, and it's the Rand Paul standard, whether this senator is more likely to get beat up by their neighbor or more likely to just freak out and just start wailing on their neighbor. And Tester 100% would beat up his neighbor.
Oh, no. Yeah, he would fucking camel clutch, power bomb. He would destroy him.
Moving on, Indiana, some polls show Donnelly up by 3, others show Mike Braun up by 3. There's a big vote for the Libertarian candidate, something that might very well end up bailing Donnelly out. The race has devolved into accusations of outsourcing. Both of the candidates are private businessmen. Donnelly calls his opponent China Mike. The Republicans call him Mexico Joe.
Come on.
God, I love American discourse. Come on. It rules so hard.
Indiana is a hellish place.
Oh, it's awful. One of the worst states we've got.
And Donnelly, who's an accidental senator, he mostly sucks.
No, he's bad.
For instance, he supports the border wall. But I think a credible argument can be made that he can stick it out.
No, I think Donnelly's going to win, too.
It's tough for me to say, but I'd say Donnelly. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Donnelly.
Will?
I'm going to go the other guy just to be contrarian. What's his name?
Mike Braun.
Mexico Mike.
Mexico Mike. Mexico. Oh, China Mike.
China Mike.
No, China Mike. Because I like that name because it's like China White.
Yeah, exactly.
Chinatown.
He's got that good shit.
Yeah, China White. Donnelly's going down. China Mike is going to win this one.
In Missouri, Republicans got the candidate they want. Josh Hawley, telegenic young attorney general who led Yale's Federalist Society during law school.
Oh, sounds like a cool non-psychopath.
He was favored by all the major blocks of the GOP, from Club Growth to the MAGA contingent.
I'm not kidding. I was doing that as a sound effect. I did just throw up in my mouth a little bit.
Commitment to the bit.
But here's the thing about Josh. He's lazy. He pissed off members of his own party by skipping important events like the Lincoln Day dinner in his own home county. His fundraising is a third of McCaskill's. Earlier this year, instead of campaigning, he posted Instagram videos of himself lifting weights at the gym.
He's got Felix's vote.
Yeah, I assume Felix follows him. That is alternately praising him or criticizing his form and saying things that I just don't understand. He's also been photographed skipping work to buy wine in the middle of the afternoon. He's famously a fan of wine.
Well, I mean, I enjoy it as well. You know what? He's not going to win because this is not the kind of country that rewards an entitled, lazy, Ivy League shithead with high position of power in the government. That is not an American tradition. No, of course, I'm doing irony, and that's why he will win. McCaskill's cooked, and good riddance, she sucks.
She does suck.
I love McCaskill as of late was like being interviewed, and they were like, so what are you doing this Halloween? And she was like, I don't know, whatever Bernie Sanders and AOC isn't doing. And they were like, wait a second, we weren't asking about that. She brought up Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren.
I am not one of them.
She brought up Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren unbidden, like in response to like some fluff question about
this is an Arby's.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, is Bernie Sanders dressing as a ghost? Well, I'm going to be a Dracula.
No, she's running right hard.
And she's going to eat shit, which is hilarious.
Yeah, good riddance to her. She's awful.
The most recent nonpartisan poll show this race is a dead heat, but she is beneath the magic 50% mark. Last time around, though, most polls had her up by about 4-6 against Todd Akin in the run-up to the election. She won that race by 15 points.
Yeah, but I mean, keep in mind, she was given the absolute gift of Todd Akin.
And that was at a time when things didn't happen all the time. Like, one thing happened a week, and the one thing was him saying that about the rape. Now, that wouldn't make it... If he happened to that in the morning, it wouldn't make it to the evening news.
In my mind, this is the toughest call, because Missouri is Hell World Central. It is the crossroads of the Hell World that is America.
Oh, no. It's just right in the middle there, just this separating asshole, this throbbing hemorrhoidal butt just sucking us into the inferno.
It honestly could go either way, but I'm going to give the tiebreaker to the fact that it is a wave year, and I'm going to say she ekes it out.
Okay. She's rewarded for being an absolute piece of shit.
And then North Dakota. That's the sad one.
Yeah.
Republicans have Kevin Cramer, the state's congressman for a few years now, who's asking for a promotion, saying he's done a good job and he's earned it. It's not a bad pitch in this genteel state. Also helping him is the Republican legislature's naked attempt to disenfranchise the over 30,000 eligible Native American voters in the state. Their new voter ID law requires anyone who shows up to present an ID with their home address on it. The problem is, on many of these reservations, people don't have home addresses. They get their mail through P.O. boxes, which are on their ID and explicitly cannot be used to prove your residency. Well, as many as 5,000 voters, they estimate, fall into this category. Last time, she won by around 3,000 votes.
And see, this is the kind of shit that's, I think, going to be, it's going to determine more races than you'd want.
A few community groups are engaging in, frankly, heroic round-the-clock efforts to get IDs to Native voters. And a big part of this task is figuring out where they live in places that have long not had house numbers. The government of the state said, you can get your house number by calling the local sheriff. This is true. In the end...
Who doesn't love talking to the sheriff?
In the end, it might be for naught. Disenfranchisement or not, Heitkamp hasn't led in any poll for months, and she's currently down in the neighborhood of 10 points.
Done for.
I think that's it. That's the one they lose.
Yeah, they lose Heitkamp for sure.
New Jersey, though.
Oh, God. All right, now this is my second favorite
one. Those were the five canonical tough races for Democrats. But also in trouble, Bob Menendez.
This one is so fucking good.
This is 100% stem-to-stern Democrat fuck-up. It's coming down to the fact that Menendez only got in the Senate for being appointed to finish fucking Lautenberg's term. He never even won an election in his own right, and yet they stuck with him. This corrupt Pizzagate depraved psychopath.
Yep. And, stepped on. He had an actual progressive challenger, right? Yeah,
they never organized any kind of meaningful opposition to him, which is just more calamity to the
primary
Democrats
against him didn't really take off. And a big part is because, New Jersey Democratic Party is very much so a tightly controlled machine. And they freeze you out if you oppose their candidate.
Menendez literally knows where bodies are buried, as in actual bodies in actual holes in the ground in the Pine Barrens. He knows, he has the fucking geolocation for them. And they're like, we'd rather him go down than fuck with him and have him decide to blow up our spot. That's the only explanation for that.
Leaving aside his, fondness for pizza, shall we say. And the fact that, the dude, was credibly accused of sleeping with underage prostitutes on these political junkets is, leaving that aside, one of the absolute most basement-dwelling, shittiest Democrats in existence.
Awful.
He is one of AIPAC's most reliable fucking men on the Hill.
Yep.
Bob Menendez, a piece of shit.
And
that is unrivaled.
He's still in the Senate because he narrowly escaped conviction on a bunch of fraud charges. And it's like, it might have been good enough for the fucking jury, Bob, but that's not the same as people who are just going to be voting for
it. And now, as of late, my favorite thing to watch on TV is local news. And here in New York City, if you watch the local or evening news, every single commercial is a political ad. And half of those ads are either for Hugin or for Menendez. And Hugin has been running ads on Menendez. They're going hard on this underage prostitution thing. And I think my favorite political ad of the year is a Bob Hugin ad that features, it begins with a mother watching a television with Harvey Weinstein on it in grainy, scary footage. And she's just and then she's reading on the iPad, the Justice Department documents that outline the allegations that Bob Menendez slept with underage prostitutes. And she's reading these lurid allegations next to a crib with an infant, her infant daughter, who has a little bow, on her head.
So, she's a girl.
And she's like, I can't live in I can't raise my daughter in a world where Bob Menendez. Yep. And explicitly, and then you can see Bob Menendez's face on the iPad, hovering over this infant, this angelic child.
Yeah.
So, Bob Hugin.
By the way, the response to that ad that we've also been seeing is, hey, Senate. You want the Senate. 51 votes. You want the Senate. You know it.
Honestly, not a bad counter argument.
It is
to be honest.
Best one, and he might actually hilariously pull it off. I've seen the poll. There was a poll today. He's up by 8 points.
Some polls show a big lead. Others have it a bit tighter. But it's
I haven't seen him up in any polls.
He's led in every poll.
I feel like this race is really the vote for the creep. It's important.
Yeah,
race,
exactly. Now he'll win. And it'll be hilarious. Just this disgusting pond scum piece of shit just oozing all over the Senate. Ugh.
Yeah. Menendez wins.
What a wretched institution. The United States Senate, honestly.
Just one more Senate.
Stem to stern scumbags.
One more Senate race of note, and also in a big state that has a governor's race. I'm talking about Florida, where longtime incumbent Bill Nelson, the only statewide Democratic office holder, is being challenged by Governor Rick Scott, whose for-profit healthcare company defrauded Medicare and had to pay settlements adding up to $2 billion.
That's another non-human-looking motherfucker.
No, very not.
Oh, God, that guy is...
Just like a grub worm with a face.
Rick Scott is spending a shitload of his own money. And it is...
His money he stole from Medicare.
It really does amaze me that this guy who defrauded Medicare in a state with so many fucking senior citizens managed to win...
Because they're hogs!
Twice.
They're piggies! They're little suckling hoglets, and they just love it. They love it. They love getting pissed in their mouths.
Everything shows that this race is close. It's tighter than New Jersey's race. I think Nelson consistently has a lead of a couple points, but it's so hard to say because, frankly, presidential candidates never win Florida by a big margin, as you know. And Rick Scott has never won the state by a big margin. Both times, very, very slim.
I think Andrew Gillum is going to drag Nelson's bloated corpse across the finish line.
That's the other race, and I actually agree with that. And I would say Nelson wins solely because of the excitement about Andrew Gillum.
Which is hilarious because he hilariously tacked to the center after he got nominated, which is just hilarious. Like, he starts talking about how we need to, like, fight Venezuela. Like, yeah.
I don't think he's,
as governor of Florida, this is very crucial for
I
you
don't
to take
think
a stand on chavismo.
I don't think he tacked that far to the center, but he is very much so talking about all the Latin American leftists he doesn't like.
Yeah, he tacked to the center for sure and said a bunch of incredibly embarrassing things, in my opinion. However,
I don't know if tweeting is tagging to the center. Well, I mean, is he spending $10 million in ads about fucking...
However, what I will say about Gillum is that he has demonstrated since then, and particularly in his debates with Ron DeSantis, just an absolute creep. Just pure Trump, like, you know, Trump and Ron.
Yeah. So here's the funny thing.
No, what I want to say is like Gillum has, I think, shown like the way for new Democratic candidates to talk about Republicans.
Yeah.
He is going right at Ron DeSantis, and you know he owned him pretty hard in those debates.
Oh yeah, Ron DeSantis in bed with racists, probably a racist himself, and running racist ads and running basically a racist campaign from top to bottom, which in a red wave year would probably be enough to bring him over the finish line. Absolutely, he's also kind of erratic. He's doing the Trump thing, but he's not as good as Trump.
Yeah,
you know?
That's the thing is there's all these guys trying to be their local version of Trump, and they aren't world famous TV oafs. They're just some local car salesman dipshit.
And they also, and I forget who pointed this out in a recent article, I think it was Tom Scotia, but these guys who pretend to be Trump, they freak out when they get backlash for saying Trump things. And obviously Trump has no, you know, consciousness at all. He has no like inner monologue or anything. So you would never catch him apologizing for something.
No.
He only did once. He's given one apology in his life, and it's because everyone told him to do it.
Which one was it?
The Access Hollywood tape.
Oh, right. But even there, he's just like, locker room talk, whatever.
Yeah, right after that. Because if you remember that correctly, he like released this in the middle of the night. It's just him talking what looks like an empty room.
Oh, God, I remember that. There was a guy pointing a gun to his head off of screen.
And then, you know, right, there's like a forced confession. And then, you know, like the next day, he's just right back at a rally saying it was locker room talk.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, doesn't mean anything. But a guy like DeSantis, you hit him with something and he's he's caught moderating a racist Facebook page or something. And he wusses out and says, oh, no, I don't support racism.
He just wetly blinks like a fucking squid monster. Like, what? I'm sorry.
DeSantis did one good thing, and that was to utterly humiliate Adam Putnam, who is this famously called a howdy doody looking motherfucker by one of his colleagues on the House floor. And this guy who's been like, you know, definitely trying to be governor of Florida his entire life, worked his way up, became secretary of agriculture, and just totally got owned in the primary by this screaming guy who said that Trump endorsed him. That's it.
Yeah.
I say both Gillum and Nelson win.
Yeah.
I'm going to go the opposite direction just based on my conception of Florida as probably top three, maybe if not number one, most cursed apocalyptic state in America, that only nothing good ever comes out of Florida, except for one thing I can think of.
It could be. I mean, the thing about the Gillum race is He has led in every nonpartisan poll, but it's always been a tight margin, which makes sense because it's going to be a tight margin no matter what. But like leading in every poll, that's for by like 2 to 4%. I mean, that's consistent enough to think that he has a durable lead in this race.
Yeah.
Of course, the flip side can be true with Ted Cruz, and there's always a little bit of uncertainty there. Could there be something like a Bradley effect?
Yes, we'll see. And just before we finish with the Senate, it should be noted, the reason we're not talking about them, after Trump won, there was a mini freak out because there were a bunch of Midwestern Democrats who were going to be up in 2018 in states that Trump had won. And people were thinking, oh, no, could this like realign? And all those people are Klobuchar, Baldwin, Stabenow, cruising to reelection, not even questioned.
Yeah, no question about the Minnesota races or the Wisconsin race or the Michigan race right now. Of course, there's always an outside chance of an upset, but it looks pretty good for them. And, you know, as we close the door on the Senate, the one thing is, it's a midterm year with an unpopular president of the other party. And it's a really tough map for the Democrats. And you kind of have to think, This is really the only circumstance where people like McCaskill and Tester have a fighting chance.
Yeah, that's going to maybe get them across the finish line.
And, you know, right now it looks like, I don't want to say Democrats have thrown in the towel, because I think if one race out of my predictions goes the other way, they win back the Senate. But I think they're feeling pretty good about keeping it to a 51-49 margin or thereabouts going into the next cycle.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Especially if they win back the House, which is really that's what you need to put a check on the president, back the House.
Yeah. The Senate's sort of icy.
The problem is you'd rather have the Senate, because then you have the Senate. I mean, it's harder to do things in the Senate, but that could potentially stymie these judicial picks.
Right. Like when Ruth Bader Ginsburg just flows away on a strong gust of wind into the ocean. It'd be nice to have a Democratic Senate.
When Thanos gets his Infinity Goblet and makes all the Democratic, all the non-ghoul votes on the Supreme Court just disappear.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the governor's races then. Those are also incredibly important. Because as I said at the top of this, you elect a governor today. In many of these states, they're going to have veto power over redistricting when that happens after the 2020 census. That's pretty important. And there's an interesting story with the governor's race overall, which is that in these deep red states, Democratic gubernatorial nominees have a real fighting chance. But on the flip side, in these deep blue states, Republican governor incumbents are sailing to reelection in Massachusetts, in Maryland, in Bernie's home state of Vermont. These governors who are Republicans have very high approval ratings. And, you know, maybe they get washed out in a wave. Maybe these polls are kind of off. But I don't see that happening. Take Larry Hogan in Maryland, where polls show that likely Democratic voters have a positive view of their fucking Republican governor.
Well, I mean, part of it is that these are affluent states and they don't really have an ideological opposition to quote unquote moderate Republicanism really at all. They just don't like Trump. But I think what's notable is you've got like those three blue state Republican governors are all going to win easily. Meanwhile, Bruce Rauner in Illinois is going to get his ass kicked by a guy who might go to jail during his term because Bruce Rauner spent his term fighting just a tooth and nail budget battle with the Democratic legislature there and just tried to do this like scorched earth thing. Meanwhile, in Massachusetts with Barker and Hogan, those guys basically kind of they played ball.
Yeah.
And as a result, they get this patina of bipartisan sort of common sense across the aisle.
Yeah, the other thing is Rauner is like a very right wing guy. And he's Pritzker has spent the most, I believe, out of pocket of any candidate in the country's history, well in excess of, I want to say, $140 million.
Jesus Christ.
To buy
for a fucking governor race.
And as Felix has said,
for the shittiest job.
Yeah, no, terrible. As Felix has said, he spent $140 million. So what? He gets like a high school named after him one time?
An awful job. In an ungovernable state.
I know Felix isn't here right now, but I got to bring it up because I know this is Felix's favorite thing. Rauner, did you see the photo of him recently wearing the biker cut?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he showed
up at
a rally
with like a Sons of Anarchy like biker leather vest, like a cut that was covered in patches.
Oh, I did see
one
that.
One of the patches just said governor on it. And the other patch, I swear to God, look this up. We should probably make this the episode art. He had
a Bikers Against Child Abuse patch.
He did.
Oh, no.
Yes, they patched him in.
Oh, my God.
He's a
the
biker.
The governor of Illinois is a patched in.
What's that rumbling I hear?
You hear a sound of thunder in the distance. You're a child being abused. What's that? It's Governor Rauner kicking down the door and saving you.
You hear...
It's okay.
No, we didn't put that on the
No,
show.
We didn't. No,
oh,
no.
Damn. We should.
Just Google Bikers Against Child Abuse.
Google
it's
Bikers
very
Bikers Against Child Abuse. You hear a rumble in the distance. You're abusing a state pension plan that's underfunded. You look up from what you're doing.
No, Rauner and Pritzker are both absolute goofballs.
But the trio of Northeastern, Mid-Atlantic Republican governors with high approval ratings, that to me is the most credible evidence that Trump, despite, you know, his popularity with the base and riling up the hogs, is fundamentally a drag on the Republican Party, because I think any other type of Republican, based on the economic indicators, would have an approval rating in excess of 60% right now.
He didn't win. Hillary lost. And that's a fundamental reality that I think a lot of people haven't absorbed.
I do want the Northeastern Republicans to win, particularly in Vermont, where the first transgender major party candidate is challenging the Republican governor.
Well, yeah. I mean, it'd be nice, but it sounds like it's not going to happen.
But again, on the flip side, you have these red states where Democrats are running real well. And you want to talk about the Georgia governor's race.
Outside of Beto and Cruz, the Georgia governor's race is the one I'm most interested in. And the
I
one
got
I'm
one other
the
one.
Closest attention to. I know your one, Matt. Mine one, the Georgia governor's race is, as I last read, a dead heat.
Dead
right
heat.
Now. It's
yep.
an absolute dead heat. And I mean, to me, like, the most interesting thing is the fact that the Republican governor is also the Secretary of State in charge of these elections, and the voter suppression tactics they're doing right now in Georgia are insane and just straight out of, like, you know, the 1960s.
Oh, yeah, it's Jim Crow.
This is That's just it. Jim Crow all over again. This is 100%. I mean, Kemp has, like, been on tape. Rolling Stone had this saying, you know, a big problem for us is turnout, the other side's turnout. And if everyone exercises, you know, their right to vote, it'll be a problem for us. And this race is 100% about the suppression of the black vote in a state where it is 32% African-American.
Yeah, and that's why I got to say, tie goes to the guy who literally counts the votes. It doesn't matter who does the votes. It matters who counts the votes. And he literally is the guy counting the votes.
So you have that voter suppression there, but it hasn't dampened the enthusiasm of Democratic
voters.
Well,
Oprah was there. Oprah did a whole thing for her this weekend, yesterday.
Much like you saw in Texas, in Georgia, there is shocking levels of enthusiasm from traditional Democratic voting blocs. I've seen footage of people waiting in the rain for hours, not just to vote, but to early vote.
Like, they shouldn't have to wait for hours to vote in this fucking country.
You couldn't. I mean, but think about that. Waiting to early vote when you might normally you would go see this long line and be like, oh, fuck it. I'll just come back on election day or something.
And
failed state as well.
Failed state. Abrams, if she wins, will be the first African-American woman ever elected governor in the United States.
Yeah.
But
sadly, I don't think you can overcome the structural opposition.
I mean, again, this is like with Beto, like, you know, heart and mind, like I'm rooting for Abrams so much in this one, but it's very hard for me to, like, get my heart over the hurdle of just how wretched a state Georgia is and the Kemp and the people who run it.
I'll go with my heart. I'll say Abrams wins.
Okay.
Yeah, why not? I mean, Georgia, Hillary did decently in Georgia compared to Barack Obama, which is, you know, pretty interesting if you think about it.
Yeah.
Since it has a very, you know, relatively large African-American population. So I do think, like, the Georgia purpling, bluing thing is real. And in a wave election, sure, why not? I mean, could it be very close to the point that Kemp just monkeys around with the fucking results? Yeah, it could.
Someone else said this on Twitter, but I think it's so awful it's going to happen. Kemp wins an incredibly narrow race where the results are challenged. They go into court, and then Brett Kavanaugh provides the deciding vote to certify his election.
But here's the X factor. Georgia has runoffs. If nobody gets 50% of the vote, it goes to a runoff.
That's right.
Which, if you remember, happened in 2008 in the Senate race that actually would have given the Democrats a 60-vote supermajority in the Senate.
But they fucking punted it.
They did. Barack Obama pointedly did not go there to campaign for the guy.
No money. Nobody gave a shit. It was amazing.
Because, and it was amazing that this guy, Jim Martin, got so close to winning.
Obama did not go there because he thought it was important to bring the country together. More important than having a filibuster-proof majority in the United States Senate.
King! King!
Whoops. Oops.
No drama Obama, ladies and gentlemen.
But you want to talk about voter suppression? Chris Kobach is running for the governor of Kansas.
Oh, God!
Secretary of State. Oh. Also, pretty much just charged with... His primary went to a recount, and he was in charge of it. Whoops.
And he decided he won. So I think that's just going to be a recount or a replay.
Well, Chris Kobach is the brains, and I'm using that in scare quotes, behind every, like, he is like the guy who is like the Trump's pitch man on a national level for the just hokum, utterly spurious idea that illegal immigrants are voting or dead people. He is the GOP's resident voter fraud, voter suppression expert.
No, he is the Lyle Landley of voter suppression. He literally goes around to towns and pitches them on passing very restrictive voting rules that he says, yeah, they're going to get challenged in court. And then these towns, they pass the bills and then they spend thousands or millions of dollars in courts defending them, then they're overturned and he's out of there.
Okay.
He's like selling fucking voter suppressions to Brockton and North Haverhill.
Yo, but Kansas, what's the matter with Kansas? Chris Kobach, most recent poll from Emerson College, Chris Kobach 44%, Laura Kelly, the Democrat, 43%. It's a dead heat in that race. The X factor is Greg Orman. You remember that guy from last time around? He ran for the Senate. He was an independent candidate and the Democrats dropped out of the race because they thought he was the only guy who could possibly win that Senate race. Well, he lost. But now he's back to run as an independent candidate. And at least one poll shows that if he weren't there, Laura Kelly would be leading the race.
Yeah, I got to go. Tie goes to the guy in charge of counting the votes and making the votes.
I'll flip it too and say that Kobach wins. How about you, Will?
No, yeah, Kobach wins. He's too much of a prick not to.
But there's also surprisingly close races in places as red as fucking Oklahoma. If you remember in Oklahoma, they fucked up the budget so fucking bad that they had to eliminate 1 week of the fucking school day.
Yeah, and they were
one day of the school.
They were going to four day weeks.
I mean, also in Kansas as well, the Sam Brownback absolutely just decimated that state's budget and all its educational institutions, and
they literally had to unpave roads because they didn't have the money to. I'm not kidding. To service them anymore, so they turn them into dirt roads.
And what is hilarious about Kansas and Oklahoma, and this is very recently too, both of those states were the labs through which, like, the Heritage Foundation was like, this is going to be our test case for how we want every state and the federal budget to be run. Guess what? It turned into Mad Max in the specs of about a few months.
Like, it's also where they test all the new KFC and Pizza Hut concoctions.
The laboratories of democracy.
That one's surprisingly tight race. The Democrat only trailing by maybe 4%, depending on who you believe. What do you think?
Gonna lose.
Lose?
Yeah.
I say Republican wins. Yeah, sure. But rounding that out, you have the South Dakota governor's race, which really interesting race here. Kristi Noem, who is their member of Congress running for governor, who said a few months after she won the primary, when she actually started campaigning, I didn't realize I would have to campaign for this one. it's a tight race, and she's running against this guy named Billy Sutton, the Democratic candidate, who is a former rodeo star who was crippled in a rodeo accident where a horse flipped upside down in a tube that he was in.
The old rodeo tube.
Ouch. But he was a really compelling story. He went back to law school and then he got elected and became the legislative minority leader in the state.
I, for one, am sick of these rodeo clowns in Congress.
And also, if you look him up, Billy Sutton, he's a big guy. He's a big boy. He would be a large governor.
The Plain States love big boys.
That's another tight race. At least one poll shows him ahead.
Ooh. I'm going to go based on the tester model of large Democratic candidates who have mangled themselves in some sort of rodeo or agricultural related disaster or accident. I say he wins it.
I agree. That logic holds.
I am in agreement. Ring the election bell. We all think that the rodeo guy is going to win. And one more red state one, and this is also just a weird one because it's a weird state. In Alaska, Bill Walker is the independent governor of Alaska, who was elected with Democratic support last time around. This time he's running. He dropped out of the race because he was splitting the vote with Mark Begich. Remember that guy?
Oh, yeah. The one-term wonder.
Who is that guy?
He won in 06 in the wave.
He was the Alaska senator. He won in 08.
Oh, wait.
And
I'm sorry.
He beat...
Obama wave, yeah.
He beat Ted Stevens.
Yeah.
Who was famously...
Series of Tubes. Right
famously roasted on The Daily Show. Yeah.
Died in an airplane accident shortly after.
Well, that's a tight race now that the independent candidate dropped out, but he's still technically on the ballot. What do you think?
I don't know anything about this. My only opinion is that Alaska shouldn't be a state.
Agreed. Give it to Russia.
No, get rid of it. We need an Alaska because it's big and we can keep things there. So Alaska should 100% be. I don't know.
What, like our groceries, like pantry, you know,
it's
canned goods.
Yeah.
The strategic helium reserve.
What the fuck?
Something might come up. It's good to have that much stuff. That much air. I'm going to say, what the hell? Begich wins. Because the guy is a right-wing psycho. And
it's
not that much of a right-wing state, but a weird state.
It's a very weird state. I'd say, Republican. With the current governor still on the ballot, I'm going to say he wins.
You know what we keep in Alaska? Dangerous single men who are fleeing either child support or warrants in the lower 48.
Correct, yes.
Two more now. California's governor's race. Or wait, no, I'm sorry, but I meant to bring this one in the Senate race. Governor's race, who gives a shit? It's done. The Senate race is, of course, Dianne Feinstein against Kevin DeLeon, both Democrats, who advanced from the first round of voting.
Yeah, because they got the jungle primary there.
Feinstein is up. She's led in every poll.
Jesus Christ.
She's winning.
You fucking morons. You stupid, sun-baked idiots. You fucking avocado toast poisoned morons.
You know why she's going to win? Because they don't listen to our show out there.
Absolutely
they
not.
They have things to do.
What?
They're out in the sun.
Work on their screenplays?
They're working on their screenplay. They're networking.
Ugh.
They're having a good time.
They're in traffic.
They're like all tanned and good looking and they're chill.
They're on the Google bus.
They're coding. They're creating our future.
They're creating the future that we always dreamed of.
Also, they're getting tuned up all the time.
That's true.
They have better things to do than be miserable and listen to an East Coast podcast.
That's a good point, actually.
They should listen to native Californian and San Francisco guy, Jello Biafra, about the former mayor of San Francisco, Dianne Feinstein, fuck off, fuck off.
Kevin DeLeon does need to go to Dianne Feinstein's house and mow her lawn. That would probably win it for him. But then, again, and I know Matt has been waiting patiently for this.
This is the only other one I care about, rather than Cruz.
Marquee governor's race, in my opinion, Wisconsin, let's go.
Come on, do it, do it.
Incumbent
just get rid of
Scott
this disgusting, cum-filled ventriloquist dummy.
Three-time winner, Scott Walker, three times. They tried to recall him and failed.
He's fucking Jason Voorhees with the fucking...
Two ham sandwiches.
I'll admit, I didn't look. I don't know who's running against him. I don't need to know. I don't have to look it up.
He's like if Michael Myers was sculpted out of fucking butter. Just this relentless, just massacring piece of shit. He's trying to turn the Fox Valley into fucking Shenzhen province. He wants to he's putting a fucking Foxconn factory with suicide nets in Wisconsin. He's just the most repellent scumbag on earth. Most states, it wouldn't be an issue, but Wisconsin does not have term limits on governors. Tommy Thompson famously was elected four times. But I think he's going to lose. I think he's going to lose. It's tight, and he's running against an absolute nobody, but I think he's going to lose.
Polling agrees with you. The Democratic candidate consistently up, though one poll from Marquette shows it an even race, which, of course, is not good for an incumbent.
No.
Right?
Well, that's the thing, and it's another case where the Senate race, Tammy Baldwin's blowing away the awful troll woman, Leah Vuckmeer, and that's another thing where I think she might have enough coattails to pull this fucking zero, public instruction.
Here's the other thing. But hang on. Correct me if I'm wrong, but at least in one of these like three races where Walker won, wasn't he behind in the polls? Like in the recall, maybe?
No, it was always. I don't really remember. It was too. Frankly, it's too traumatic. But I never felt good at any point in any of those races. So I highly doubt there was any kind of consistent situation where it looked like he might lose.
How you feeling now?
I think he's, you know what, actually the data point that makes me think he's going to lose is actually less to do with polls than to do with the state Supreme Court race that happened in February. And Wisconsin is one of the states that idiotically elects its Supreme Court members. And they're always off. They're never during like regular election day. They're always a special election. And as a result, I think basically every race of the 21st century has been won by the right wing candidate, because outside money just comes in, floods the airwaves. Every ad is for this whatever fucking homunculus they've got to run interference for their agenda. And then they win thanks to all the psychopaths in Waukesha County who vote every fucking election. And I think for the first time in a decade or so, the Democrat won one of these off year, off election day Supreme Court races, and by like 10%. Like, she fucking blew them away. So I think that indicates that whatever magic, whatever secret sauce of just getting out the aggrieved elderly people slowly dying of radon poisoning in Waukesha County to put him over the top in all of these off year elections, because he's never won during an actual presidential year.
Yeah.
I think it'll do it.
Well,
I think it's over.
But here's the thing, and this applies for all the races. We've seen from these special election results that Democrats are excited to turn out. And in some of these races, I think what happened was the Democrats turned out and the Republicans just didn't turn out. This time around, I anticipate we'll have something that looks like a presidential election year turnout, and that the Republicans are fired up and they are going to come show up.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what? I just had an idea. You know what I think we should do as additive incentive to vote against Scott Walker if you're in Wisconsin? I think we should clip our reading from his book, Unintimidated, that we did in our Madison Live show, and release that as a bonus episode.
If he loses.
No, before. Just the added motivation to get out there.
That's a good idea.
In his own words, from Scott Walker, I think that will put some fire in the bellies.
I thought you meant this would be a reward that you get if he loses.
What do you think?
All right, why don't we clip it before? You're right.
Let's do it before. All right.
Those are the marquee races.
I have one final question for you, Urshel, about this election.
Yeah.
As a New York State and New York City resident, obviously the gubernatorial primary, that was a hot one. There was a candidate and a reason to vote in that one. I'm obviously not going to vote for Cuomo for governor. He's easily going to be this whatever Republican.
I literally don't know his name.
Is there anything, any candidate or anything on the ballot in New York State or New York City that I should get out and vote for? Or
is it just where you live in the heart of Brooklyn, in Park Slope, in our mansion?
Yeah.
But
I'm looking for a reason to get one of those I voted stickers. But like,
well, you should vote.
I'm gonna vote because I really enjoy
it's
putting
fun voting.
Yeah, exactly.
You get to decide
there.
Things. You're like a god, basically.
Yeah, you get to fill in the little bubbles.
And
if
the race is like shitty, you can write in whatever you want. I wrote in the cum boys last time for all the judicial races.
I'm planning on doing something similar. I'm gonna have fun with it.
I am going to vote on Tuesday.
You could. I mean, the Working Families Party is afraid of losing their ballot line. So they want you to show up, swallow it, and vote for Cuomo on their line.
They can eat shit. The Working Families Party sucks in my
they
opinion.
They are, yeah. They're anything they were trying to do is they've been absolutely hollowed out. Fuck them.
Yeah, who should I write in for governor?
You could vote for the Green candidate.
Oh, yeah, Howie Hawkins.
Okay, I might do that.
He's some guy who just keeps running all the time. He seems...
Perennial candidates, I always have a soft spot
for. He seems genial.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a socialist alternative candidate on the ballot yet.
Yeah, no, I think I'll vote for Howie Hawkins.
You could give just a good old write-in for Cynthia Nixon. Or for Sarah Jessica Parker. Mix it up a little bit. Let's try... Hey, we should let... You know, we should try things. We should experiment. Let's go through all four of them.
I'm more of a Kim Cattrall fan. I'm going with her.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, Kim Cattrall.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's definitely grist for discussion on another episode. Though wrapping things up, I mean, I'm sorry we didn't get to the awful ballot measures that you should vote against, but I'm sure you figured it out by now. If you need us to hold your hands on this one, I mean, come on.
Rent control, yes. Things like that, obvious. Public bank, yes. Fracking, no.
Yes,
I mean,
vote,
it's pretty
vote,
simple.
Yes, vote in Colorado, vote for whatever places greater restrictions on fracking. I don't know the letter or number it is. And vote no on this fucking piece of legislation that's just this amendment that would just give money to fucking frackers.
Vote yes.
If you ban fracking.
Vote yes on Measure C in San Francisco, which is basically a tax to deal with the... help ameliorate their homeless situation. Jack of Twitter has come out against it and says,
so you know that
Twitter
good.
May have to leave San Francisco.
The mods are afraid of this.
Yeah. So, yeah, Measure C, and obviously, you know, Measure B in Los Angeles.
And there are a handful of great DSA candidates on the ballot that deserve your vote. I'm sure they're very local. I'm sure you're already acquainted with them. Jovanka Beckles in California, Zach Ringelstein in Maine, who is the Democratic nominee for the Senate against Angus King and a DSA
member. Don't vote
for
a fucking steakhouse. Come on.
I said state house.
No, I'm saying don't vote for a steakhouse, Angus King.
Oh.
He's a steakhouse.
And in Pennsylvania, some great local legislative candidates, Summer Lee, Sarah Inamorato, Kristen Seal, Elizabeth Fiedler, among others.
All right, folks, this is exciting. And by the way, preempting all you motherfuckers who want to try to own me if my half-trollish prediction is wrong, and you're like, oh, see, it's not Hell World. Yeah, okay. Remember when the Republicans romped in 2010? And then 2 years later, they defeated Barack Obama. Remember when that happened? Yeah, exactly. It's all Hell World, buddy. There's
hell
no
world
escape.
All the way down.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, at least we'll be there live streaming.
And we've drinks.
On Tuesday night. We've drinks.
We've whippets.
It's
we've ket. It's gonna be lit. We have special guests.
We have special guests. No, yeah. It won't just be me, Matt, and Virgil. We will have both in studio.
My fucking apartment. Yeah.
We will have in-stream guests, and we will have call-ins from many of our friends in the Chompoverse, many of whom are going to be actually out there, you know, covering this election.
Shoe leather reporting.
We will bring the election to you.
Yeah. And no need to watch the just blank-faced dullards of cable news, fucking the perfect ovular face of Rachel Maddow staring blankly at election results. Don't worry about that crap. Or fucking Wolf Blitzer trying to decipher simple mathematics. Don't worry about those motherfuckers.
We promise that the Chapel election stream will be the best online coverage of all the events this Tuesday outside of the Chatterbait election stream.
Of course. You can't be there.
And Matt, what are we calling our election night coverage?
It's Armenia Decides 2018.
Okay. So get out there and vote, guys. You know, it's a game.
Look, if you want to.
It's a game. Whatever. Play the game. Why
I will
not?
Say it's fun to do. Yeah. I do enjoy doing it just as an experience. I always have fun when I go.
We'll see you Tuesday.
At the polls.
Tuesday night. Okay, guys.
Bye.
All right. Bye. Turn out for
what? What's up? It's Lil Jon, and I'm turning out for the legalization of marijuana.